You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 27th, 2011. This is episode 194, Websites and Word Processing. Hello again, this is Martin Spriggs, and welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. We're up to episode 194, quickly gaining on that special episode 200. I'm joined, as usual, by my podcasting buddy, all-around good egg, Sally Draper. Morning,
good
Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Nice to join you on episode 194. We're going to have to figure out what we're doing for episode 200. I think it calls for a party or something.
We would welcome suggestions from our listeners. I think they probably could come up with something for us, as long as it's within reason, like not camping out on the roof for a night or something like that.
Yeah. Actually, we had an interesting event out here in southern Minnesota. Got together on Friday night to eat pizza to help raise funds for a big bike ride that's coming up. There's a group of Wells pastors and teachers in the area that enjoy a summer bike ride, and they do the multiple sclerosis tram. It's a 300-mile bike ride. Would you be up for that kind of trip, Martin?
On a Harley, maybe, but no. not on a bicycle.
Nope, they're pedaling, and it takes them about 5 days to do the 300 miles.
That's
they
awesome.
Camp each night, and the cities all along the way that welcome them, and it's just a really neat event. And one of the local pastors, Pastor Scott Muskie up in Fairfax, actually bused tables at a local pizza restaurant to raise funds to fund his bike trip.
Interesting.
And, yeah, it's all a donation thing for multiple sclerosis.
Cool.
But these pastors seem to really enjoy it. They've done it for several years.
And that would be interesting. It's, Minnesota's kind of flat, so there's not too many hills. Those are the things that that get me. It's the hills.
So anyway, fun way to get a little break in the summer for that group of guys.
Hope it cools down a little bit for that.
Yeah, actually, I think they're doing it this week as this podcast is playing. So the forecast, we're pre-recording for this week of July 27th, but the forecast is for it to be a little bit cooler than it has been the week before.
Right. Well, we are still in the summertime series that we've called Wells Hacker, where Sally and I take a stab at a blog post and hopefully provide some valuable information within that post that is useful for some kind of ministry opportunity. And we've talked about things like photo management, collages, different tools in Windows, and it's kind of a potpourri of different tips and tricks that we come across in our workings, our day-to-day life of technology. And Sally, I think you're hitting leadoff today.
Oh, good. I'm excited because probably one of the most common questions I get from people is how to create their own website. This is a self-publishing world that we live in, and there are many, many opportunities out there to create a website, and you certainly can do it with fee-based services. You can pay money and get your own domain name and things like that. But my post today focuses on five free ways to create a website. And I use this title, Fave 5, for my post, because I do a series of posts in that category on my blog. This is the first time I've done it as a Wells Hacker post, but if you look back in the blog history, that's been one of my recurring themes, is to kind of share with my readers just some of my favorite in various categories. I've got everything from recipes to iPod games out there and what my favorite five are. So this week I'm going to share with you my Fave 5 free website platforms. So perhaps you're looking for a small group website for your church ladies or something like that. Or maybe you're going to be working on a class reunion or an alumni page for your school. And You just want a simple little website to put some information out there. And I have lots of links here and lots of different purposes for the sites that I've selected. First up on the list is Google Sites. And through your free Google account, you can create different layouts and things for different websites. And they have a lot of templated websites as well. So you can just select, I want a classroom website, and it'll propagate your page with all different ideas and page layouts that would be appropriate for a classroom website. And then you can just go in and make changes to it to customize it to your needs and to add your own content. So I would say of the sites I've listed, Google Sites might be one of the more challenging to work with, but it also allows you to have a lot more flexibility and control over what you're putting there. Mm-hmm. And it also has security built in.
Right.
You can share the site publicly on the web, or you can keep it private and require people to have a password to get into the site. And there's lots of flexibility about who can make edits or publish things on the site as well. So lots of potential there with Google Sites. And for each of the five sites that I outline, I actually give you a sample site to go take a look at. And the one I linked to for Google Sites is actually from my high school band reunion that we held last summer. So we put information out there about the reunion itself as people were trying to get signed up and things like that. And then after the fact, we posted a lot of the pictures and things that were shared at the reunion. And it turned out to be a really popular site for our group. So very useful tool to use Google Sites for that.
Yep.
Kind of on the opposite end, if you just want a simple website, one that I've really fallen in love with is called Orbs.
I love O-R-B-S. Your description here. Winner of my prestigious Dead Easy Award.
That's right. Nice. It is dead easy because as you have edit privileges on an Orb site, you just click on an area of the page and all of a sudden you're able to edit it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not intimidating for beginners to go out and create a website on Orbs. So check it out.
I've never heard of Orbs. Where did you come across this?
Probably just not as mainstream. I'm guessing I heard about it through some Wells Tech connection.
I bet.
I don't really remember the history of that. But
okay.
They do have a lot of fun layouts. The example I provided is one that I did as a sample classroom site.
Mm-hmm.
So I put kind of an elementary look to it. But they have a lot of really cool designs and things that you can make use of. And you can also customize their designs. So depending on how deep you want to get into it, you can do a lot of customization with the site as well. It's really structured to just be web pages. You can embed some video and pictures, but just kind of simple. Not a lot of the bells and whistles that you would get with a Google site, not a lot of collaborative ability and things like that. But
it looks like it does the job for basic image or information presentation.
Absolutely.
And you can have subpages. Looks like you've got a hierarchy there that you can use, so you could organize your content that way. Nice.
Yep. I'm a fan for sure.
Yeah.
Shifting gears a little bit, the next one on my list is Wikispaces.
Oh,
and I'll have a little caveat that this is free for educators for sure, and maybe for small personal accounts as well. But Wikispaces is a wiki tool, which means it's built for collaborating. It's built for having multiple people contribute to the website, and it has all the resources built into it to manage that, especially if you get an educator account. So the place you see this used the most is with teachers and classroom pages.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of assigning a group of kids to work together on a poster project or something, you might assign a group of kids to work together on a wiki where they explore your particular topic that you're studying in school at that time. The example site I have actually won the most recent EduBlog Award, which is a vote on award that people do across the edutech community. And this one is called Greetings from the World, and people all over the world literally have created accounts on this particular wiki and contributed a look at their location through Glogster pages that they post there. And so wikis aren't always the prettiest sites.
Mm-mm.
They They aren't built to be just gorgeous places that, you know, design-wise, right. But they are easy to contribute to, and you get a history of all the changes made to them and that kind of thing. So definitely fill a niche in a classroom-type setting.
Yeah, and you get a you – know, most people are familiar with Wikipedia, and that's not the most visually compelling site either. They do a little bit more cleanup than some other wikis, but really the point of a wiki is to get as many people involved as possible and make it as collaborative as possible. And sometimes the visual appeal is not as important as, you know, getting the content on there. So these are that's a great tip. I like the whole concept of a wiki, and especially in a classroom or educational setting. Makes a lot
Definitely.
Of sense.
Perfect fit. So the last two entries in my Fave 5 list are blogging platforms. First up is blogger.com, which is actually owned by Google now. It yep. started out as a separate company, and Google's kind of enveloped them. But a super easy way to get started with a blog. Blogs are typically journal-type websites, and they're done with date-centric entries, just like the blogs that you experience if you head over to sallydraper.com and martinspriggs.com. The most recent entries are typically at the top of the page, and you have an archive organized for you with the blogging software. Blogger, as well as the next one, WordPress, give you lots of options with the templates and things that you can make use of. So you can design your blog to fit your needs, and it might be great for a hobby or for posting things like sermons or things that you do on a regular basis, writing centric things. It might also be great for posting photos and videos. Mm-hmm. You can do all of that with Blogger, and you can also do all of that with WordPress, which I say for last. It is the best on my list. It's my favorite platform for blogging, for sure, and it's the platform we use for the Wells Tech blog, as well as the ones we use for our personal blogs. You can create a free account at WordPress.com for about, I think it's $17 a year. You can get your own domain, and they'll associate it with your WordPress.com account. So lots of options there, but certainly you can do it for free. The example that I share is from Christ the King Lutheran Church down in Palm Coast, Florida. And they have a regular website, but they use their blog for posting sermons and Bible studies and things like that. And then they tie that blog into their regular website via their RSS feed. And I think they've done a great job with the layout and design. It's easy to follow, and they have things categorized well and things like that. So a good example of a ministry use of a blog there.
Very good. I think almost every need, at least for quick and, you know, get some stuff up on the web and in a reasonable way and format, these tools are all excellent choices. I like them.
Mm-hmm.
Fave 5, and I'm going to have to follow your Fave 5 series. You tag your those as such in on your blog?
I do. I actually have a tab at the top that's all Fave 5. So
nice.
Get to them easily.
All right. Well, my Wells Hacker tip of the week really focuses on cloud-based office suite products. Most people are familiar, and we've talked many times on the show about Google's suite of tools called Google Docs, where you can go in the cloud to google.com or docs.google.com and create a document, a word processing document or a spreadsheet or a presentation type document. But for a long time, I'd been thinking, well, it would be great if Microsoft would get in the game here and get their stuff in the cloud, because those are the tools that I use every day. I've got the Microsoft Office suite installed on my computers, Microsoft Word and Excel and PowerPoint and those kinds of tools. And lo and behold, about 6 months ago, they launched a beta, and now they're, you know, full steam ahead with their cloud-based Microsoft Office suite of tools. Word is there, Excel is there, PowerPoint, OneNote, Project and Visio are coming very soon. But basically, these are cloud-based versions of those products. And they're a little bit stripped down as you can imagine, you know, on the web, there are some limitations. But what's cool about it is if you do have Microsoft Office installed, you can save back and forth. So if you start a document online, you can download it or open it on your local copy of Word or whatever, edit it, and send it back up. So if you want to do some advanced editing like footnotes and table of contents, those kinds of things, you can do that in your local copy. But for most purposes and for many church offices, for instance, or school offices or individuals, just looking for just general word processing or spreadsheet or PowerPoint kinds of tools, the online version may be all you need. It works with a Microsoft product called SkyDrive, which is 25 gigabytes of free storage if you have a Live.com account or a Windows Live ID, they call it. And in the blog post, I walk people through how to set that up. And once you've got your Live ID and go to Live.com and log in, not only do you get email and calendar and all that stuff like Google provides, but you get this SkyDrive function where you have access to these online Office Suite tools. And another nice thing about it is that once you've got these documents going, you can permission them. So you can permission them for everybody in the world to see, or just your friends, or just individuals. And those individuals that you invite to it obviously need a Live ID as well, which is free. They can go online and see the document, but they can also edit the document. And not only edit the document, you can edit it at the same time. So you can have a number of people editing on the same, collaborating on the same document at the same time. And it does a nice job of controlling who gets to edit what, and you can see where somebody else is working, so you don't you're not competing to edit the same paragraph, for instance. And it's just a real nice, consistent experience. It has the Microsoft Office ribbon bar at the top, which is now across all their apps. I think that started in the 07 version, and it's carried on to the 2010 version. They've done a nice job with this. It's very speedy, very stable, and what the best part about it is, if you're storing the stuff in the cloud, Microsoft is taking care of the backup for you, so that you know that it's not going away, that it gets backed up, and just a nice experience. And especially if you're looking for just some free word processing cloud-based tools, this is probably a good place to look. Plus, you can store all kinds of other stuff on your SkyDrive, up to 25 gigs, as I mentioned, for free. You can put photos up there. You can put any kind of document up there, images, other word processing documents from other programs even. They can all go up there, and you have access to them wherever you go.
So I'm wondering if you can you share with someone that doesn't have an account?
No.
Do they have to have an account?
They have to have. Obviously, they need to be able to log in to Windows Live or have a Windows Live ID to be able to to identify themselves. So there is a little bit of
overhead. That's the way Google Docs works.
Exactly.
As well,
yeah. There's no way around that.
Okay. You can't just make it public.
You can. And I think in the case of public, I don't think you need to log in, so you don't need an ID to view the public documents. It's a nice little slider that they have there where if you slide it all the way to the top, it says everyone/public. So I think that just provides the link. Or you can provide a link, and then people don't need to log in to see that. But anything beyond that, I think they do need to do that.
I'm just thinking of applications where maybe you post your church council minutes or something, and you have people that aren't super techy or don't have the latest software or whatever.
Yeah.
This would be a good way to share it potentially with groups like that, and still allow for collaboration and editing and things with those that should have those powers.
Yep. So I think the
documents,
the experience is better than Google's. It's a little more polished and more familiar, especially if you're used to the Office Suite already. Google Docs, to me, has always seemed kind of half Web 2.0-y, if that makes any sense. They've tried hard, but it's not a familiar interface, so it's not as comfortable. This is clearly a takeoff of their desktop app. So, and it's all free.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's probably a lot of people that would just dig in and say Google Docs is great and I don't want whatever Microsoft has to offer. And then there's a whole lot of people that are in the Microsoft camp that appreciate the fluid and easy to use nature. And now the ability to sync and everything must really just add a whole new dimension to going to the cloud with their documents. It's exciting to see them do this and do it very well.
And it works seamlessly if you do have the desktop version where you can save right to the cloud. You're not even saving it on your hard drive at all. You're just working in an online environment. You can also download the document if you want, to attach it to an email and send it to somebody. If you don't want to ask them to get a Windows Live ID. So there's all kinds of ways around that.
So would Microsoft be the dark side or the Google Docs?
Well, Google Docs was there first, so they're kind of the they've got the Death Star thing going.
Okay.
But I think Microsoft is trying to catch up, and this is a good first effort, so it's definitely worth a try. And you have more storage than Google offers. Google, I think you only have like 8 gigs, 7 or 8 gigs, and you share that with Picasa and your mail.
My Gmail takes up most of it. So.
Yeah, mine too. But this is 25 gigs, so it's not a bad product.
Nice.
Shall we move on to community feedback?
You bet. This week we heard from Pastor Thomas Smith, who serves in Owatonna, Minnesota, and who happened to be one of my Final Web for Dummies participants a few weeks ago at Martin Luther College. And one thing we went over there was online registration forms or forms for gathering data. And as it turns out, he wrote me with a success story. I was excited to read his email this week. They did a mass mailing in Owatonna for their upcoming Vacation Bible School, and they had three families they hadn't otherwise connected with use their online registration form and sign up for their Vacation
Bible
School.
Awesome.
So that
I love
is just
those
great
stories.
To hear.
Yep.
And we wish you continued success with your online outreach efforts there. And it should be encouragement to anyone who's a webmaster out there. And I know it's a lot of work to always get everything up to date on your website, but there are benefits to having those kind of resources available.
It's almost an expectation when you're doing something like that, especially when you're reaching out to the public, is, hey, where can I sign up online? People don't want to necessarily call or fill out a form, bring it in, or mail it in. They want to get registered now because they're in that mode. They've made the decision, hey, I want to send my kids. How do I sign them up? And then, boom, they go to a website, submit the information. They get a confirmation. You've got the information. They're comfortable with the fact that, hey, this is happening. And just makes a lot of sense. And it's so easy to do. So,
and it gives a positive feedback on who you are and what your web presence is to have that ability there. So.
Yep.
So next up, we heard from Jason Schmidt, who shared a link to an interesting project that kind of came out of the ISTE conference that was held a few weeks ago. Apparently, Google's vendor stand at the conference, they gave away sunglasses, and they kind of started taking pictures of themselves and groups of friends and tweeting pictures wearing the Google shades or the Google sunglasses in various locations. And being the creative teacher, this particular blogger thought that that might be a good kind of global project to start, having students from around the world share via a wiki pictures of themselves in different locations wearing the Google shades and writing about kind of historical significance or geographical significance of the locations where they are. So I thought it sounded like a fun project, and I love to see these kind of things taking shape and taking off. So there is a link in this blog post to sign up and participate in the Google Shades project, and it sounds like Jason may even know some of the people behind the project. They might be from the Omaha area. So check it out if you'd like a fun collaborative project for your classroom to participate in.
They used a tool that I think I mentioned a long time ago called Posterous, which is kind of a micro-blogging site, and the link in there takes you to that. It's called googleshades.posterous.com, and Posterous is kind of niche is that you can email stuff directly to the blog, and that's how this is set up too, where you can just email a picture. But real interesting if you scroll through the Posturist blog. It's kind of like Tumblr. We've talked about that in the past too, where it's just, you know, a picture and a little bit of text. But kind of fun to see kind of a community around just kind of a fun little topic. But I can think of lots of different scenarios where a classroom project could take off like this too. So.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we heard from Ryan Rosenthal, who shared a link in the DIGO group to Groove Shark, which is a free music online tool. I guess kind of parallel to Pandora, where you can search for different music and listen to streaming of it.
It's more like, it's a little bit like Pandora. It's kind of like RDO or Moog or Spotify, which just launched in the U.S. Because Grooveshark also allows you to select the songs you want to put on a playlist, which is a little bit different than Pandora. But they do have a Pandora-like feature where there's a radio or similar artists kind of thing. So very cool tool, especially for free. You can load this up on your desktop and play your musics.
Sounds like fun. And then I had a couple to share. First up is a link to an Edutopia article that came out a few weeks ago, and it's titled, What Should Elementary Students Be Able to Do and When? And this is written from the technology standpoint, and it actually looks at grades K through 6 and all different technology skills, from logging onto a computer, making capital letters, using the shift key, opening a file, knowing how to leave a useful comment for a peer, just a whole variety of technology skills. And it gives you a listing at each grade level, whether it should be an introductory skill, developing skill, or applied skill. And I was really excited to find this chart. Obviously, it's one person's opinion about what kind of skills kids could have, but it does give you a good benchmark to work against if you're trying to evaluate whether your technology curriculum and the skills that you're developing in your students is on track for where they should be in comparison to others. So.
Yeah, I like the way they laid the chart out, where it's very easy to kind of see in a grid format how somebody develops and at what point do they move from introductory to developing to applied. So at what grade level should they have essentially mastered that skill. So even if you don't kind of buy into all the ratings here, probably a good tool that your school could use for developing your technology curriculum, and if you've got something like that, it does do a nice job of kind of capturing the skills, at least, even if you don't agree with the ratings. So a good jumping off point for your school.
Yeah, and I also wanted to make mention that I found this link by following the Martin Luther College Library on Facebook. They have a page on Facebook. They have 84 people who are currently liking the page. And if you aren't, you might want to, because they regularly post great educational links on their Martin Luther College Library
page. I did not know that, so that's a good tip. Do you know who maintains that page?
Is it? I don't. But,
I wonder if Jim Grunwald's behind
it. Learned a lot.
Yeah, nice.
So then the last link that I shared via DIGO is to an article from The Visual Lounge. This is a blog run by my friends over at TechSmith. You may have heard me talk about TechSmith before. They're behind.
Oh, just a few times, so.
Yeah. Tools like Jing and Snagit and Camtasia Studio, which are great for image and video production, especially from a trainer standpoint. They're just a dream come true. But anyway, this particular article is talking about delivering video to mobile devices, and in particular, the challenge that many devices don't run Flash, which is what has kind of been adopted on the web as a standard for posting video. And so they've got a few workarounds. The number one easiest workaround is to post your videos on YouTube, because if the video is on YouTube, it does play on most mobile devices. Mm-hmm. So they have software that will format and post things directly to YouTube. There's many ways you can certainly upload your own video directly to YouTube. And then they say if you embed that YouTube video in your website, it should play from your website on a mobile device as well. So that's their number one recommendation. You can also use their free service called screencast.com to post mobile-friendly videos as well. So good read and a little bit of insight into the state of mobile devices, at least right now. I know with HTML5, there's more options opening up, but we're kind of in a transition period to that. So this is a good read.
Very good. If you would like to give us some feedback on the show or different topics you'd like to see us cover or talk about, please do so by visiting our website, wellstech.wells.net, or send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. Can't get any easier than that. We also are on Facebook. DIGO is always a good option. You can join our Wells Tech group on DIGO. Just search for Wells Tech. And we have a listserv and all kinds of other good things. Those blog posts that we mentioned on the show today on our Wells Hacker series are available on our personal blog sites. SallyDraper.com is where you find Sally's, of course, and mine at MartinSpriggs.com. And mine are also on the Synod's Wells.net website. So we'd love to hear from you. Please let us know what you think. Next week, Sally, we've got a special guest, and we're going to be talking about the iPad with Pastor Guy Marquardt from California, who's been on the show before talking about Mac-type things, and we're going to be talking about his experience of Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary's summer quarter, which he attended, and only with iPad in hand. It's kind of similar, Sally, to your little vacation experiment with the iPad.
Yeah, I think it's a popular thing to do. It weighs a whole lot less than dragging along a laptop and all the peripheral items for that.
And, of course, his challenge was taking notes and getting to resources that were mentioned in the class, and he did it all with the iPad. So we're going to have some blog posts in our Wells Hacker series that relate to that particular concept, tablet computing and iPad in particular. So you'll want to be sure to tune in next week for that conversation with Guy. Let us close the show with the music of Koine from their album Church Bells. Fight is a good fight. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
With all your might, Christ is your strength and Christ your light. Lay hold on life and it shall be your joy and crown eternally. Run the straight race through God's good grace. Lift up your eyes and seek His face. Life with its way before us lies. Christ is the path and Christ the prize. Cast care aside, lean on your guide. His boundless mercy will provide. Christ is its life and Christ its love.